Right now, South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson is back with us and also, of course, running for governor in 2026. Mr. Attorney General, thanks again for spending a little time with us on the Grand Strand this morning.
Hey, it's great to be with you again on your show. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we did. In fact, we just caught up with some mutual friends of ours a little while ago with our sports talk. I heard that you go head-to-head each week with former Governor Jim Hodges in your football filibuster picks week to week at sportstalksc.com.
Yeah, Governor Hodges and I have done that on the Phil Kornblut show for a number of seasons now, and he's really good at this. You know, he knows his stuff. I have to give him his credit.
Yeah, there's no question, and this is the go-to resource that we have, talking all things related to South Carolina, of course, Clemson, and then, of course, back in our backyard here at Coastal. All right, let's get to the business at hand here this morning. Caught an op-ed over the Thanksgiving weekend at thedailycaller.com. As I'm combing through it, I'm like, hey, I know the guy who wrote this op-ed. In fact, he's a frequent guest on our program. His name is Attorney General Alan Wilson, and your headline reads, President Trump is right to strike narco-terrorist boats before they reach our shores. There's some controversy surrounding this, at least in the news this week. Why do you stand where you do on this topic?
Well, first off, as a 30-year combat veteran and a colonel in the National Guard who served overseas and who has also been the state's chief prosecutor for the last 15 years and has seen the drug trafficking trade grow exponentially over 15 years because of lax border policies, I've recognized that not all warfare is conventional, and a lot of foreign terrorist organizations, which Tren de Aragua and other subsets of the Maduro regime out of Venezuela are labeled as, engage in conduct that doesn't necessarily fall under conventional warfare, but it poses an existential threat to the United States. And there are things that countries do, like Russia with its Wagner group and China with its little blue men groups, you know, using the fishing vessel fleets. They're not armed in uniform. They're not engaging in conventional warfare, but they have military objectives against the United States. And so we can't be confined and constrained, to fight a war when your hands are tied behind your back. And so I support the president using military force to obtain or succeed on a military objective of ending this narco-terrorist threat to the United States, which is the whole point of it, is to undermine and weaken the United States both economically, militarily, and internationally. And so I fully support the president. I think that attacking these boats is well within their rights under federal law. And under the president's constitutional authority. I think he was acting well within his realm.
And as you said, through your legal experience and your qualifications, there are multiple laws on the books that give the top executive in our federal government this leeway to operate within this realm, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have the Maritime Drug Law Enforcement Act and the Drug Trafficking Vessel Interdiction Act, just to name two. And also, under the Constitution, the president has the right to, as the commander in chief, to use the United States military to conduct military actions and engage in military operations with clear military objectives. And people feel like there has to be some declared war in order for the president to put on his commander in chief act. No, we have military operations going on all of the time, all around the world. You know, it's actually rare. I mean, people forget Vietnam wasn't a declared war. And we had all kinds of military actions going on at that time. The president can use military assets to conduct a military operation that has a military objective, which is to neutralize the entire narco-terrorism drug trafficking trade that is infiltrating the United States and weakening our economy and killing U.S. citizens. They are very deliberate in what they're trying to do, and we cannot rely simply on law enforcement and public safety laws. We have to rely on the United States military to wage an effective war to destroy, neutralize, and suppress drug trafficking trades coming into the United States of America.
Do you feel like we should be using these methods maybe closer to home, say, along our southern border, where a lot of these Mexican drug cartels control the land and the way of life a few miles away from them, then utilizing different means to bring drugs and people into the country, although it has obviously slowed down severely since this new administration has taken over?
Well, first off, we are using military assets along the southern border. I mean, even South Carolina has sent its National Guard soldiers who are under Title 32 authority under the federal code, but they were sent down there among other states. But you also have to remember, the military isn't needed as much at the border as it was initially because we actually are enforcing federal immigration laws now. I went down to the southern border last May near the Yuma sector, and I learned that in a one-mile stretch of border, they were averaging 4 illegal crossings per day in May of this year. 2 years ago, at that same month, they were averaging 1,500 illegal crossings per day in that one-mile stretch of the southern border. So by simply using federal law enforcement and enforcing federal laws the way they were intended to, you don't need that military assistance because you're able to accomplish it with domestic operations under federal law.
Talking with South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson, of course, candidate for the Republican nomination for governor here in our state moving into next year, the June primary in 2026. Speaking as a member of the National Guard, we had a couple of hundred, some odd hundred National Guard troops and guardsmen scheduled for deployment up in Washington, D.C. Had that tragic news from over the Thanksgiving weekend involving the two guardsmen from West Virginia. Young woman loses her life, another one fighting for his after an Afghan national travels across country to carry out some attack inside D.C. Do you think we're utilizing our National Guard properly? And do you feel like we, and you don't necessarily know, the situation on the ground up in the district, but nonetheless, do you think we're on the right path in terms of federalizing troops and bringing them to certain cities elsewhere around the country where crime has been a problem the way it has up that way?
So what I can tell you is I work at National Guard Bureau, and as a colonel up there, I've advised the chief of the National Guard Bureau or the general counsel for the National Guard Bureau. I have many friends working at the Pentagon who are in the general counsel's office for the Department of Defense, and I know the people that are advising Secretary War Hegseth and President Trump. I know them personally. I've served with them for many years, and what I can tell you is right now we not only have the moral authority and the moral mandate to do what we're doing, but we have the legal authority as well as a legal mandate to do what we are doing. And I know full well that we were within the legal bounds. The problem is, had local, state, and federal law enforcement had the ability and had not been hamstrung by their civilian masters in these respective cities, especially the national capital city of Washington, D.C., we wouldn't have to be doing this. Again, when you tie people's hands behind their back and you prevent them from doing their jobs, and when they do their jobs, you engage what's called the Ferguson effect, where you make law enforcement so afraid to enforce any law that they'll be sued or thrown in jail, then all of a sudden they quit doing their jobs. And then crime rises, and then all of a sudden it undermines your ability to run a city, especially the national city, which is a federal enclave of the U.S. government. So certainly the president has the right to make our national city a safe place for the world to come see. If you can't have a safe Washington, D.C., then what kind of message does that send to the rest of the world when you can't even keep your own, national capital safe?
Talking again with our Attorney General Alan Wilson this morning, have him for a few more minutes covering a number of topics in a very short period of time and bouncing around a little bit. Appreciate your versatility, as you often showcase when you call into the program as frequently as you do. You also recently joined a 21-state effort challenging a policy that allows students to share rooms on field trips and sports travel based on gender identity rather than biological sex. Apparently this was an issue in Colorado. What brought your attention to this topic?
Well, look, I believe that you have all of these social issues popping up all over the country, and they need to be resolved because they're eventually going to end up on the shores here of South Carolina. They're going to end up here. And so I'm working with coalitions of states to defend the rights of states, to pass laws that protect the privacy and safety of our students when they go on school field trips or they engage in school activities. I also go and engage in coalitions to fight against school districts who refuse to protect safety and the security of our students and the privacy of our students. And so I believe that if we can win the legal battles in Colorado, we never have to fight them here in South Carolina because they will end up here. These issues are important, and if we can get them resolved at the Supreme Court or at least at the Court of Appeals, then that will be a hedge against other states, including you know, school districts, even here in South Carolina, from taking liberties that might affect the health, safety, security, and privacy of our students. I'm committed to protecting students here in South Carolina, and I'm committed to protecting the parent-child relationship here in South Carolina.
Wrapping it up here with South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson. This all came about, right, pertaining to the case in Colorado. Essentially, there's been a lawsuit filed on behalf of a young girl. Her parents want to block a policy that was dismissed by a federal district court, that would have put her in a room on a sports trip with a transgender female or male, and they didn't want any part of that, essentially.
Absolutely. And again, the fact that we're having to have this conversation, that we're having to have an argument, a legal debate, and a social debate on whether a biological male can walk into the shower room in a girl's locker room or sleep in a room with another girl, the fact that this is even an argument is ridiculous. It's stupid. And so I'm determined. You know, I'm not doing this to get media attention. I'm doing this because I'm the father of two teenagers, and just like every other parent I talk to in my community and in your community, I want to make sure that we get these questions answered and get this issue nipped in the bud so that we don't have to keep talking about these ridiculous issues. It shouldn't be a question as to whether or not biological males and females should be able to engage in sports together or go into showers or locker rooms or stay in hotel rooms together. I think we have a duty to protect these kids, and I'm going to see it through.
All right, wrapping it up and bringing it more back here to South Carolina specifically. And I know this is not necessarily off the mark from where we're at and have been here this morning, but I know there's been a lot of talk in Columbia over the past several weeks pertaining to road building infrastructure. And we spoke with Nick Reynolds from the Post and Courier. He was covering a meeting yesterday related to the Department of Transportation and trying to figure out ways to keep up the road funding as the state's population grows. This is obviously a big issue, something that will not be ignored or should not be ignored by the next administration, whomever that might be, whether it be you or the other candidates running for office. What do we need to do to try and keep up with infrastructure here in our state as we grow in every corner of the Palmetto State?
Well, first off, we got to be innovative. The largest landowner in the state of South Carolina is the state of South Carolina. When you're driving down the interstate, you see that middle, that median of grass. We own that. When you see the easements on the left and right sides of the interstates, we own that. Why are we not monetizing the land that we own as a state? I would be fully supportive of public-private partnerships in tolling the roads or tolling the median in between the interstates with a toll road that is built by a private company, and then we charge people for the privilege of driving on the additional lanes. Let's go ahead and lease the easements on the sides of the interstates to telecommunication companies and oil companies or energy companies who want to put pipelines there, and let's collect that revenue and put it toward infrastructure. All of our public buildings where public workers work, we don't collect property taxes on that. We need to have mixed-use government buildings where you have private sector retail and restaurants on the ground floor so you can collect the property taxes. Let's privatize the rest stops along the interstate. Let's put gas stations on them and charge a premium to use that gas station and let people driving through our state help us pay for our roads and people who want to use the convenience of having gas stations and restaurants right off the interstate at privately maintained rest stops, you know, pay for our infrastructure. These are just some of the things that we can do, but we got to get out of our own way. We got to think outside the box, and we got to do what we can to provide better infrastructure, not only to people who want to move here, but to our citizens who already live here and who are sick and tired of sitting in traffic.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, our area in particular is seeing a lot of growth with, you know, having a penny sales tax to help essentially fund the road building in our state or in our county, at least here in Horry. Hey, Mr. Attorney General, we covered a lot of territory in a short period of time. Again, thank you for being able to switch gears on moment's notice just to let all the listeners out there know that we would never rehash or highlight some of the topics that we're going to discuss, for oftentimes is the case. It's the first time he's hearing some of the questions I'm going to ask him when he phones into the program on a regular basis. So we thank you for that, Mr. Attorney General, and we'll do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it. Have a good day.
And again, that's South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson. According to some of the latest polls that have been released over the past week, he has risen to the top of the list of the Republican candidates running for governor next year with around a 6 percentage point lead over the Lieutenant Governor, Pamela Evatt, with about 40% of the electorate right now, at least on the Republican side, still very much, and rightfully so, undecided as to where their vote might go come June of 2026. We continue to talk regularly with all of the candidates running for the top spot in our state government come November of next year.